Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsible day for the 25th of Av. It's Rav Moshe Feinstein on how we assess a community to build a mikvah. This is from Igret Moshe Choshet Mishpat, Chelek Aleph, the first time he did Tshuvot on Choshet Mishpat, Siman Mem Aleph, chapter 41. So the 25th of Av of Tavshin Chof Aleph of 1961. And the question is, how do you assess people? How do you collect money from people for the building of a mikvah? So Rav Moshe starts off with his answer, and then he's going to defend it as the tshuva goes along. He says it should be, and this is a concept that I've seen several times in traditional literature, and yet I'm not sure that people always realize that this is a very traditional approach and applies to many areas other than just the assessment of money, although it applies there as well. He says it should be chatzi lefi mamon vechatzi lefi nefashot. It should be half according to money, meaning according to people's wealth, and half according to nefashot. So that would mean, for example, let's say the mikvah is going to cost $2 million to build or rebuild, and you had 500 people in the community. Rav Moshe is saying that half of the cost, $1 million, should be raised by the number of people in the community. That would be $2,000 for each of those 500 people, not a significant amount of money. And then the other $1 million you raise from people according to their wealth, according to their abilities, right? That's, he thinks, the compromise that all of the communal mitzvot have been done for hundreds of years in the Jewish community. He mentions the Ramah, who says in Orach Chaim Nun Gimel Chaf Gimel 53, paragraph 23, that when it comes to hiring a chazan, that's the way you would do it in terms of paying the chazan's salary. And the Taz said that would mean, therefore, somebody's going to hire a chazan, that the salary of the chazan should come. Now, it gets complicated because shul budgets aren't as careful about this as they separating these two. You would theoretically then take half of the chazan's salary out of the membership dues, that everybody pays the exact same membership dues, and the other half you take out of the extra donations that people give. I'm not sure the shul budgets do that. I think today also we've gotten very used to having the wealthier members of the community subsidize a lot more than half. I'm not sure that membership dues always pay half of the cost of the shul, including the salary of the chazan, but it's not for everything. The Rav Moshe will think that. He thinks that for a chazan, for a reason we'll get to. And the Taz explains the reason why we do it that way is because everybody needs a chazan. The Aniim also need a chazan. But the Ashirim, that today, the poor people, poor is a relative term here, it just means the people who aren't going to pay more than the amount that will be assessed to everyone in the community. So in our mikvah case, $2,000 is not a small amount of money for people. So it's not that they're poor, it's that they are the people who won't be able to pay more than the amount that it would cost by taking an assessment equally from all members of the community for half of it. They need a chazan as well. But the rich, the wealthy, want a chazan shekolo arev, who has a nice voice, and therefore they want more. Now today, sometimes what happens is the rich will pay even more because of that, because they say, we really want somebody who's kolo arev. So these are important communal issues, and that's why I find this tshuva so interesting. I think sometimes it happens. I've seen communities where the rich have a certain standard of living, and they want that standard of living for themselves and their community, and therefore they put things in place according to that standard of living, and they don't always realize that that sort of obligates them to continue paying for it because it's a standard that's beyond many people. So that question, I think, comes up. I think it comes up in building schools. I think sometimes schools are places where the wealthiest people's children will feel comfortable and well taken care of in all the ways that the wealthy people would like, and that's great, and the less wealthy people in the community benefit from that, but it means then that it's not always clear that you can do chatzi l'nefashot and chatzi l'mamon, that half of the cost be paid by everybody equally because everybody doesn't have it, so you get into these problems. So this is the way Rav Moshe is doing it. That would mean you're going to have to build a mikvah in this community that the community can pay half of it from their membership. Anyway, to continue his points, there's the essential mitzvah, the fundamental basic mitzvah, and then there's making it as beautiful as possible, and therefore you can do it this way in splitting up the cost. The Magen Avraham quotes a Hagol Maimonides who points out that when it comes to making sure you have a minyan, so let's say you have a community where there's only eight people, and they want to hire people to make the minion so they can have a minion. So the Magen points out that the poor people could say, well, we'll travel further for a minion, whereas the rich people don't want to have to bother traveling. And therefore, now it's true that the poor people need a minion there as well, but they can say, we don't want to pay too much for it, right? Because we could travel more. Now, the theory is that the rich people don't want to bother to travel, and the poor people can travel. In our times, that can sometimes be reversed. The truth is that the rich people might have easier transportation ways to get to a farther place than they might say. So anyway, it gets flipped. But that was true back then in the time that I got my money out, and that was to point out that when it comes to these mitzvot, everybody has some stake in the mitzvah, but sometimes the rich have more of a stake or have a stake of a different sort, and therefore that's what they're going to be asked, or they're going to be indicated they should pay more for it. Or let's say it's in that city itself, this minyan or whatever this mitzvah is, and the poor would take more time or effort to get there, but they don't care because they don't have anything else that they're doing, whereas the rich people would rather not have to put in the effort to go. Right? Very often convenience is an issue. So poor people aren't willing to pay for a convenience, and rich people are willing to pay for a convenience, and that's where you get to this kind of issue as to what people will pay for and not pay for. So that's the compromise that evolved over time, was that the way to adjust this would be half of it by population and half of it according to resources, and that would be a fair way to split up these things. Gets complicated enough times, as I've said. Now, the Magen Avraham there did quote the Lavush, who said, if there's no minhag in that place of how to do it, they should gather it according to money completely, meaning just raise money and everybody will give as much as they are. Now, when they say raise money, I think they mean assess people according to their money. There was a feeling, certainly in those times, in the times of the Rabbah, the Magen Avraham, the 15, 1600s, that people knew around how much other people had, and therefore the central communal people could assess people according to their money. Today would be somewhat similar to if a community is trying to raise money for some cause and they say, well, so-and-so could probably give X amount. That might amount might be off by somewhat, but often people have a fairly good understanding of it. So the Lavush had said, do it completely according to money. And the Machzit HaShekel there said that the Rabbah held that because we say about hiring a cousin, that according to money, and that's what you get from it, that it might be according to money, hiring a cousin as well, although that's not the way Moshe had said it. So that's only in a place where there's no custom. Whereas in Or Chaim, he wrote it according to Minhag HaKehilos, according to the custom. But then the Machzit HaShekel says, but that's only in a cousin because there's no absolute necessity for a cousin. It's pretty good if it's there. So in a place where there's no custom and no necessity, and the wealthy people say, no, we want this cousin who's got a really great voice. So there it might be that you would gather it more according to donations than according to population. So we're saying that this mixed collection system, where you do some of it by a pure assessment and some of it by collecting, it doesn't have to always be half and half, because it'll depend on who wants what and how necessary and how vital it is and how much of a communal custom there is around this issue. So sometimes it's half and half, because that's just everybody understands that we absolutely need this. But there are those who would like it a little bit nicer, and then it gets more complicated as you go along. In the case of a cousin, you might have a communal custom half and half, you might not. If you don't, so then it'll depend. If it's a bare bones cousin, it's just because we need a cousin, this is that guy we got, we all agree, and it's at a price that everybody can agree is a fair price and is a price that the community can afford, then you do it maybe more towards the level of collecting equally from everybody. But if you're going to say, or if a segment of the community is going to say, well, we want something better, and they're willing to pay for something better, that's okay, but then that becomes more of their financial responsibility than the other people in the community. Along the way, Rav Moshe notes that the Prima Gadim and the Mishnah Brura seem to disagree about whether or not, when we're collecting for a certain cause, in this case, for a chazan, let's say. So a chazan, the Shulchan Aruch had said, you use kupat ha-kahal. So kupat ha-kahal would mean the community money. The question is, what does that count as? The Mishnah Brura thought that that must be according to donations. That's what kupat ha-kahal means. Kupat ha-kahal is we go around, we ask everybody for what they can give, and they give whatever they can. That's considered kupat ha-kahal. That's not lafi nefashot. Whereas when it came to finding people for a minyan, we said it was going to be half and half. But the Prima Gadim there made it sound like it was a new collection. That in for for hiring a kazan, you would gather a new collection because he says, Kupara kahal, yesh lifamim gam haknasot acherot sheyesh lekulam zechut hashaveh. He says, sometimes in the community thing, you also have other collections like membership dues. So if you had a community that just had one big bank account in their community, and when they got membership dues, they put it in there, and they got special donations or larger donations or extra donations, they put it in there as well. So that would be also Kubara Kahal. So the Prima Gadim thought, no, for a chazan, you're going to have a new collection, which make it sound like it's completely bimamon, and you would collect it that way. And Rav Moshe's not sure what they're arguing about. But that's what you have. You have people who hold that way. When there's no minhag kihilot, that's the way you would do it. Then he says, he found something surprising. The Prima Gadim had thought that the minyan question wasn't when you have eight and you're looking for two more, which the Rav Moshe thinks that it is. The Prima Gadim seemed to think that it was when you had 11 in a city, and so you have a minyan, but two of them want to go away. And the two who are leaving have to hire one person in their place because they can't leave. They're going on a business trip or something. So they can't leave the rest of the community in a lurch. This is just, by the way, a point about that's not always realized about the necessity of making sure that a local community has a minyan. So if you're a member of a community and you never go to a minyan, so you're considered a bad member of the community because if a community, communities are supposed to have minyanim. So that should be, and that's an obligation, and all the men in the community at least, to make sure a community has a minyan. So it's one question. If a community regularly has a minyan with no problem, they have a minyan, 17, 18, 19, 20 people. So it's not like if I wake up in the morning or if I'm around in an afternoon and I'm thinking, do I need to go to Minchat Marv? The answer is yes, you should go to Minchat Marv. But let's suppose I feel like I don't want to go. So in a community where there's a minyan without me, no problem, that's one question. But when there's a problem of the minyan, so this discussion is showing that it's really an obligation of everybody. So the Prima Gadim held, you have 11 people in the minyan, two want to leave. They're not allowed to leave unless they hire somebody, and they pay that, he thinks, meaning if one guy's very wealthy and one guy's much less wealthy, and then they would split, they would figure out how much it costs to hire a guy to come to the minyan for while they're gone. They would divide that cost in two. Half the cost they would each pay equally, and then the other half they would divide, you know, depending on their money. The implication is that if there were only eight in the community, let's say, and they had to hire one or two, that would be completely, you'd pay it according to wealth, like in the case of the chazan. And the Prima Gadim says that's odd, because if it's that he can't leave, right, unless there's a minyan, then he should pay a full half. Why would it be like a chazan? Why should he pay half according to nefashot? It's also him who's causing it to be an issue, right? And that's why the Magen Avraham said there was a mistake in the Shulchan Aruch, the way it's written, and it should be written a different way, and gets into all these technical issues. But fundamentally, Rav Moshe thinks that when it comes to providing a minyan, that's not like a chazan. A chazan is more of, as it were, a luxury, and therefore there's more room to say that it would be all according to money in a place where there's no minhag kihilot. But when it comes to establishing a minyan, that's a more basic requirement, and therefore it would have to be chatzi lefi nefashot and chatzi lefi mamon. So you might have thought that when it comes to going on a trip or leaving the community for a while, that the rich person has more of a need. And Rav Moshe says it's not necessarily true, because it might be that the poor person, this is the way that this poor person is going to make a basic living, scratch out a living, and that can be even more vital of a need. Meaning when people go on a business trip, who needs the business trip more? So sometimes the rich person wants it more, but sometimes for the poor person it's more essential. Right? If you have somebody who's making $1 million a year, and they got to go on a business trip because they might make an extra $20,000, they'll want to go on the trip. It's worth their while, but it's not like it's going to determine whether they have, you know, whether they're supported or not. As opposed to somebody who's scratching out a living and has an opportunity for a business trip, he might really have to take it just to be able to make the living that he needs. So therefore, when it comes to paying for the person who's going to replace them, it seems clear that it would be chatzi nefashot and chatzi mamon, that both of them have to pay some of it just by the fact that they are members of the community, and then they have to pay. So Rav Moshe holds very much like the Magen Avraham that there's a taot sofer, there was a scribal error in the Shulchan Aruch, and that you take out certain words, you put in other words, and that's the conclusion when it comes to replacing them, to guaranteeing a minyan in the community, then it's chatzi the fashot and chatzi the mamon, because everybody has some need of it, and therefore you have to pay the basic, then for half the amount comes from everybody equally. And then on the other hand, there's people who want more or want to do it in a better way, and that will be according to donations. The Rambam also says that when it comes to building the shul, and Choshen Mishpat says this, when it comes to building a shul, it's also lefi babo. It's a completely a financial thing. So you're raising money to build a shul, you won't necessarily, now many communities today do have some assessment to try to have everybody participate, and they add to it what they can raise by donations. And I don't think it's half and half at all. I don't think the assessment part covers half, but they want everybody to participate, and they try to add to it. So why shouldn't that be chatzi lefi nefashot? Why shouldn't that be a full half according to nefashot? So now we've got the case of the chazan, which is not, unless there's a specific communal custom, and also the building of a shul. So now Rav Moshe suggests an explanation, whereas the minyan part we said was. So he says the minyan part is because there's actually a personal obligation on every member of the community to help make a minyan. So if you have eight people and they need the minyan, so they've got each of them a personal obligation to daven with a minyan and to be part of a minyan. But when it comes to a chazan, it's not really their each of them's personal obligation to make sure that there's a chazan to say chazar al hashatz, to repeat the Shemoneh Esrei, to say Kaddish and Kedusha. There's no specific personal obligation. There's more of a general community obligation to have this, even though it's clear, he says, that every individual fulfills a mitzvah, meaning I go to minyan and I help make the minyan, I'm doing a mitzvah. But if there are particular obligation that I have to make sure to be at minyan, Rav Moshe is saying, I'm sorry, minyan there is, but instead of being a chazan or having a chazan, having somebody do that, I need to have a davening that goes on with a chazan, but there's no personal obligation on me to make sure there's a chazan, there's a communal obligation. So too, in terms of building a shul, he says, it's not true that a community has to have a shul. There's a din, the halacha is, the community has to come together to daven with a minyan. But if they found a house to do that in, and many people do, so in terms of the particular personal obligation that rests upon the person of each member of the community, they can get away with that. He's not saying they should. He's just pointing out that technically they could. But there's also, in addition to that, a broader obligation, and this is on a community as well, on the community, that every community has a place that is set aside for davening, and that is the place that people know to be the place of davening. They treat it with the proper respect of davening. As the Rambam says, at any place where there's a minyan of people, they have to make a special place for the purposes of davening. So, and that would be true, Rosha says, even if they already have a house where they're doing that, he thinks, the Rambam holds, that there has to be a separate building with its own status as the shul, because otherwise, the Rambam should have just said, you have to daven with a minyan. But that obligation to make sure there's a building that is the special place for davening, that we treat as a special place for davening, that is a communal obligation, not an individual obligation. And therefore, he thinks that's why the Rama paskins that there's not an obligation to do it the feet of Fashot. We don't do it, he wouldn't necessarily require an assessment according to the number of people in the community. It would all be lefi mamon. So his standard so far is, there are places where there's a custom to do it, there are situations where an obligation will be done according to money, that will take it from people as they are able to pay, and when we take it from people as they are able to pay, that would be called lefi bamon. That's things like building a shul. And according to some sources, the Rabbah in one place, that will be what a community will do if there's no particular custom in that community. Now, I have to say, I think there are communities where they'll resent that just because then it feels like the wealthy are controlling the community, and there are people who will be unhappy with that as well. But that's the way it's possible. That's the way you do it. And the reason is that the wealthy very often want a different standard than what the regular people want. There are other situations where you will split it and where some of it will become from everybody according to their ability. That'll be chatzil and fashot. Every single person will pay the same. And then above that, you'll take donations. And that's another way that you can have the hiring of a chazan, as you have in the Rambah in another place where there's a minhag that way. When it came to building a shul, that he thought was completely according to Mamon. And now coming back to our question, And now when it comes to the mikvah question, so when he wanted to differentiate that, he said there's a difference also between those situations where there's a personal obligation. So the case of when you had eight in the community and you needed to hire people to make the minyan for them, that's going to be a personal obligation. So there you're going to hire it chatzil fashot and chatzil mamon, half according to the an assessment for each of the people equally, and then the other half will come from people according to their ability to pay. So that's because it's a personal obligation on each one of them. But in terms of having a chazan or having a shul, a separate place, that's a broader communal obligation. And therefore, he thinks it might be completely according to mamon, according to people's ability to pay. So when it comes to a mikvah, which situation will that be like? So he says that's a clear personal obligation on every individual, because every individual family needs a mikvah. It's just that one mikvah can count for the whole community. So we think of it as a communal obligation, but really it's a personal obligation. So therefore, he says, it's half according to Bamon and half according to Nevashot, especially since you'll say the wealthier people will say, we want a mikvah that has these qualities to it, these luxuries isn't the right word, but these ways of making it nicer in a way that the less wealthy people might have done without. And so he says, so if they assessed it in this community where they were asking the question completely by assessment, if they did it completely according to population, he thinks that's wrong as well, because the language of the Ramah and the Magad, the name of the Levush, is that they it sounded like it was only Lefi Mamon, but it's like as he said. So he thinks it can't be completely by assessment. And the reason why you wouldn't do it by assessment is that the poor people will say it's unfair because it's too much money, and then they won't pay, or they'll insist on not paying. So he says, no, it's half according to Vashot and half according to Mamon. And if you did, and he thinks it's such a mistake to say that it's completely Lefi Mamon, that if they had said it would be completely Lefi Mamon, or they had said it would be completely Lefi Nefashot, he thinks it's possible that it's such a mistake that even if everybody agreed to it, it doesn't count. Because he says, and this comes up, I think, in other places that people don't realize, if people make an agreement and they don't know the halacha, and therefore they make the agreement, they think, oh, well, this is what Jews do, this is part of my obligation as a Jew, and they don't realize the halacha is otherwise, then that's not that's an error that doesn't take away their right to go back and to say that, no, we want to do it the way the halakha says we have to do it. So if they said, listen, we have a $2 million mikvah, everybody has to pay, in the example I gave at the beginning, everybody has to pay $4,000, and they'll say, oh, I guess that's what you have to do. So even though everybody has said that they had a communal vote and everybody agreed, it doesn't matter because it was a mistaken vote, and therefore they have the right to say, no, we don't want to continue this, we want to go back and refigure the financial situation with this mikvah. All of that is in terms of how to figure out how much people should be paying. Then the question becomes what to do with people who refuse to pay. So this community had thought, and I think in the early 60s, building a mikvah was a big deal, and communities didn't have so much money, and there were people that didn't pay, and it caused great trouble and great pressure on the rest of the community, so they need to do something. So they had thought to say maybe that people who didn't pay would not be allowed to use the mikvah. So he says you can't do that because nobody owns the mikvah, and even if you could do it, it's terrible because you're leading people to not go to mikvah, and that'll cause all sorts of violations of various prohibitions in the Torah, and there's no way that we're allowed to do that. What they could do is they can assess the wealthier people in a way that they won't be allowed to use the mikvah because there is in this city another mikvah, right? So in other words, you're living one place where there's no mikvah. He says you can't stop people from using the mikvah. But if there's a mikvah, it's further away. I've heard, they have communities where, I know of a community where the community lived in one place for a while, had a mikvah there, and then the community moved and demographics shifted. So that mikvah, while it was still functioning, was now in an area of town that people didn't like to go to. So as you're building the new mikvah, he's saying, maybe you could say the people who refuse to pay for it will be forced to go back to the old mikvah and continue using it. But even that, he doesn't think is the right way to do it, because what's going to happen, this is the early 60s, but what's going to happen is it's the wives who are coming to mikvah, and it's their husbands. Back then, it was their husbands who were refusing to pay. So you're going to be having these poor women, not poor financially, but these unfortunate women who are going to come to mikvah. They're going to get turned away and said, no, you have to go to the old mikvah in the bad part of town because your husband didn't pay. So, and you can't know what's going to happen because maybe those women will be so annoyed or so unwilling to go to the other part of town that, God forbid, they'll say to their husbands, well, I did go to mikvah, and then all sorts of things will go wrong. So therefore, Moshe says he thinks they have to find other ways to collect the money. You can bring the people to Beit Din. You can demanded of them in public, right? Where Moshe seems to feel like you could stand up and say, so-and-so and so-and-so have still not paid their mikvah, you know, commitment, and we're very upset about it, and maybe the communal pressure would do it, but you shouldn't do it the other way, such as not letting the women use it or charging them more, saying, well, most people pay $5 when they come into the mikvah, but you're going to have to pay $500, because in all those cases, you have to worry that people will just decide not to use the mikvah. And then he throws in a thing, which was true in the 1960s and should still be true today, but sometimes is not, but is an interesting note to point out. He says that the woman who's what we would call the mikvah lady, who's hired to watch over the tefillah to make sure that when women immerse themselves, it's done correctly. She needs to know what she's looking for. She needs to know that the woman's preparations, her shampooing her hair, you know, washing her hair, washing her body, should be all correct. There's nothing on the woman's body or in her hair that's getting in the way of a valid immersion. Meaning, We want it to be able to go everywhere on the body. So the mikvah lady, part of her job is to make sure that there are no blockages, there are nothing stopping the water from going where it would, to see that, and for her to see that the woman immersed herself completely in the mikvah. And then he says, "Vegam shetiyeh b'sever panim yafot l'chol hanashim." She should be pleasant. She should have a pleasant countenance with all the women that she deals with, to try to draw them to keep observing the mitzvah of nida, of marital purity, and of coming to mikvah. And it has to be a pleasant, she should be making it a pleasant experience. And then we should know of her that she's a ne'emenet, that we can trust her, and that she's yirat shamayim, that she cares about mitzvahs and about Torah, and she cares that they all be done right. And then he says, and even if you can't find somebody who covers her hair, right? Since today, he says, sadly, many people don't cover their hair. He says, hire somebody who doesn't cover her hair, as long as we know that she cares about the prohibitions of nida, and she cares about immersion kadin, immersion according to halacha, because the fact that she doesn't do one halacha, covering her hair, does not affect, if we don't have anybody else, but it doesn't affect our trust of her that she will take care of nida issues properly. So, about a mikvah lady, Moshe is saying it should be done pleasantly and nicely to welcome people, not to make it a burden on people. And even if you have to, it doesn't have to be someone who necessarily covers her hair, as long as she is somebody who cares about the mitzvah of tefillah, about the halachot of nida, of a woman's taking care of their cycle, their menstrual cycle in the right way and going to mikvah at the right time. If she cares about that and will fulfill these obligations the right way, then she is an appropriate woman to be a mikvah lady. Then he says, finally, if you have a piece of paper or something which has on it the brachot and has the name of Hashem written on it, it should not be put in a place where women stand there naked. That's a Gemara in Shabbos, and therefore you shouldn't do it that way. So these are some of Moshe's thoughts about building a mikvah in a community. The main one being that the collections for a mikvah in a community, he feels confident, should be done chatzi l'nefashot, chatzi l'mamon, half according to a population assessment, like a poll tax, as it were, and half according to how people can pay, to donations people make according to their ability to pay. And that is Rav Moshe Feinstein's tshuva for the 25th of Av. Have a great day.